Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on Riodel's Animal Kennel Project and confirmed ICE arrests in Mendocino County. But first, we'll do a catch-up on local happenings and alerts. This is KMUD News. Starting off with news from the Yurok Tribe. On Tuesday, the Yurok Tribe broke ground on a state-of-the-art $37 million Yurok Health and Wellness Center near the Martins Ferry Bridge. The Waksewan Treatment Center, a 53-bed, approximately 26,000-square-foot health and wellness center, will house an inpatient and outpatient facility to provide residential substance use disorder treatment, behavioral health services, intensive outpatient services, and ancillary support services to Yurok and other Native American tribal members and the surrounding community. Once completed, it will be the first and only tribally run inpatient wellness center in the region. Offering culturally based and conventional treatment options, the integrated wellness model planned for the facility aims to address the physical, mental, and social health needs of residents ranging from infants to the elderly. Construction of the facility, located near Weechpec, is expected to be completed in spring 2028. Earlier this year, the Yurok Tribe broke ground on a $7.9 million youth center adjoining the Weechpec Tribal Office. Informed by the voices and needs of Yurok Tribal youth, the facility will provide culturally centered behavioral health services, including mental health care, substance use disorder treatment, educational support, and community wellness programming for tribal youth ages 12 to 23. The tribe was also awarded a $12 million California Department of Health Services grant to develop a peer respite center as part of the expanding behavioral health infrastructure in the Weechpec area. The project will provide a peer-supported recovery and respite center serving individuals transitioning from residential treatment and their families, providing community-based recovery support and temporary lodging. The center will complement the clinical and youth-focused facilities nearby. In Southern Humboldt, those in Garberville today may have noticed a black and red helicopter hovering over town. Due to helicopter activity by the Sheriff's Department in recent weeks, reports came in to KMUD News and other outlets. However, this helicopter was being piloted by a PG&E subcontractor, which is why it needed to hover low to conduct inspections. It was also not available via public tracking at PG&E's request. Thankfully, no need for alarm with this specific helicopter, which was tail number N718GH. And not the N487HB helicopter that is used by the Humboldt Sheriff's Department for cannabis enforcement. Next, and from the Humboldt Sheriff's Department, is news of a third death from drowning in the past week on the Trinity River. On July 22nd, at approximately 4:17 p.m., the Humboldt County Sheriff received a 911 call reporting a possible drowning at Kimtoo Beach in Willow Creek. Humboldt County Sheriff's deputies, along with emergency medical personnel, responded to the scene and contacted the reporting party. According to the reporting party, a family member had last been seen floating on a flotation device in the Trinity River near Kimtoo Beach. A short time later, the flotation device was found overturned in the river and the individual was no longer visible. Witnesses reported seeing the individual being carried downstream by the river's current. The individual was subsequently located and recovered from the water unconscious. Emergency personnel immediately initiated life-saving measures, including CPR. Despite their efforts, the individual was pronounced deceased at the scene. The decedent was released into the care of the Humboldt County Coroner's Office. An autopsy is pending to determine the official cause and manner of death. This marks the third drowning in the Trinity River within the past week. Sheriff's Office urges everyone recreating local rivers to exercise extreme caution. River conditions can change rapidly, and swift currents, cold water temperatures, and hidden hazards can quickly become life-threatening, even for experienced swimmers. From the city of Eureka, the Eureka Police Department is transitioning its alarm billing and registration program to an internally managed process. As part of this transition, EPD will not be accepting any new alarm registrations or renewals until the new process has been implemented. The department is working to complete the transition as efficiently as possible and appreciates the community's patience during this process. Any false alarms will continue to be billed as normal. EPD will announce when the new system is available and registrations and renewals resume. Additional information regarding the updated process will be provided at that time. Residents and businesses with questions about the transition may contact the Eureka Police Department at 707-441-4060 or email alarmbilling@eurekaca.gov. Up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. Two ICE detentions, one day apart, in two Mendocino County towns. One man with a criminal record, one with none at all. Ryan Hudson has the story, and the questions still going unanswered.
A husband and father in Ukiah. Another father in the coastal town of Cleone, just north of Fort Bragg. Two men in different Mendocino County towns, both detained by ICE, less than 24 hours apart. In Mendocino County last week, two apparently targeted ICE detentions in one week have raised new questions about who's being targeted and about a Redwood Valley hotel that may have played a role inadvertently. On July 14th, Miguel Nava Sandoval was detained on Brush Street in Ukiah. Family members say in a GoFundMe post that Nava Sandoval arrived in California at the age of 8 years old, applied for DACA as a teenager, and has lived in Ukiah ever since, working and raising a young family of his own. His DACA status is unknown. However, according to the Mendocino County Rapid Response Network, no arrest warrant was presented at the time of the detention. Nava Sandoval is now being held several hours south at the California City Immigration Processing Center. The very next day, on July 15th, ICE agents detained 46-year-old Juan Arenas Cinega in Cleone. Unlike Nava Sandoval, ICE's own statement on this arrest, issued via X, formerly Twitter, was very specific. Federal agents say that Arenas Cinega has prior convictions for DUI and spousal abuse, a prior deportation, and now faces a felony illegal reentry charge. However, in a cursory search of cases tied to Arenas Cinega's name in the Mendocino Superior Court, multiple traffic violations, including DUI, are listed, but we did not find a case related to domestic violence. Unlike Nava Sandoval, ICE's detainee locator system does not list where he is being held. It simply says, quote, call ICE, unquote, with a number that connects to an office in Tacoma, Washington, not in California. ICE's San Francisco field office representative, Jason Sweeney, told us by email that the agency does not break down arrest numbers by county and could not comment on current or future operations. Two men detained a day apart, one with a documented criminal history the agency is highlighting, and one with no criminal record at all, according to family and community accounts, a DACA applicant who's been in Ukiah since childhood. It was also reported that federal agents had been lodging at the popular casino and hotel in Redwood Valley during the same week. On July 20th, the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians, headquartered in Redwood Valley, issued a public statement addressing reports that ICE agents had stayed at the tribe's Windham Hotel property. Tribal Council says the bookings came through a federal government lodging program and that the guests did not identify themselves as ICE agents or DHS personnel at the time of check-in. The council pointed to a unanimous vote, a 7-0 vote, that formally barred ICE and DHS agents from staying at the property and reiterated that they have a no ICE policy. Redwood Valley sits between Ukiah and Cleone, the two reported arrest locations. Whether the hotel was actually used as a staging point for those operations is something we cannot confirm. When we asked the tribe for specific reservation dates, they responded but declined to provide any information. None of this reporting would be possible without local rapid response networks doing verification work in real time. The Mendocino County Rapid Response Network confirmed both detentions within hours, including details like the number of agents on scene and the description of vehicles involved. They even put out a Be on the Lookout alert for two specific vehicles seen near Fort Bragg during that week, a black Hyundai Tucson SUV and a silver Jeep Cherokee with temporary dealer plates, they say. Humboldt County's own Central de Pueblo also hosts a rapid response network. The Humboldt County Rapid Response Network also coordinates similar tracking and is hosting Know Your Rights trainings and free attorney consultations this week in Eureka, July 23rd through the 25th, in partnership with the UC Davis Labor and Community Center. Representative Jared Huffman's office, whose district covers Mendocino County as well as Humboldt, has not responded to our request for comment on either case, despite two outreach attempts. For KMUD News, I'm Ryan Hudson.
Left without an animal kennel provider in the aftermath of Miranda's rescue, Rio Del is building their own, KMUD News reports. The city of Rio Del is still grappling with the aftermath of the atrocities that occurred at Miranda's rescue. Like many cities in Humboldt County, Rio Del had previously been contracted with Miranda's rescue for animal services, especially dogs and cats picked up by the Rio Del Police Department. At the Tuesday, July 21st meeting of the Rio Del City Council, Police Chief Joshua Finney presented a recommendation made by an ad hoc committee that was formed to come up with ideas to solve Rio Del's lack of an animal control and shelter provider. You'll first hear from Rio Del Police Chief Joshua Finney as he presents the council with the ad hoc committee's recommendation.
The ad hoc committee decided that the 12 by 24 foot 6-run prefabricated commercial kennel was the appropriate option. It comes complete with electrical packaging, climate control, floor drains, dog doors, heating system, all for the ballpark figure of about $70,000. We eliminated some of the options on this since the writing of this packet, eliminating some of the AC related stuff in favor of the fan, kept the heat element for wintertime, saving us a couple $1,000s there. This includes the construction of a 28 foot by 18 foot reinforced concrete slab that this building would sit on. That will cost us approximately $12,890. The installation of an automatic electric gate system with walk-through access gate, associated fencing improvements. We have a quote for that for $9,750. At the time of writing this, we estimated the additional features, including the modification of the power to handle this building and the installation of the tank, be approximately $10,000. Unfortunately, that has come in closer to $25,000, bringing our total project cost up in the ballpark of $125,000. Staff is recommending that council would authorize staff to actively seek donations, sponsorships, grants, outside funding sources, with the goal of securing approximately 30% of the project costs.
As stated by Rio Del Police Chief Joshua Finney, a prefabricated commercial kennel and concrete slab would cost around $125,000 to build, and the city would also seek help through donations. The Rio Del City Council then discussed the proposed new Rio Del Kennel construction project, beginning with Mayor Pro Tem Amanda Carter. She is strongly in favor of the project, as Rio Del is currently utilizing kennels in Fortuna, with only one or two kennels available to Rio Del at a time, which is not enough capacity to meet demand. Here's Amanda Carter's statement on the proposed Rio Del Kennel project.
I sit on the ad hoc committee, so this isn't the first time I'm seeing this. I know these numbers are big and these numbers are scary. And I think that when we do our budgets and It's not like Riedel's rolling in a ton of money. I do like the idea of looking for donations and other, you know, funding sources, but ultimately, I don't know how much of a choice we have about doing something like this. What we're doing now is hanging by a thread. We're doing our best, and we're doing a bang up job so far, of keeping cats out of the PD and of everybody running around trying to deal with any dogs that do come in here. I know we have Fortuna as a backup plan, but that's not sustainable either. It's not going to last. I think that the goal is to be as self-sufficient as possible for the future. You know, I've talked to Chief about this. I think 85%-ish of the dogs that we take in are somebody's pet that we need to give. We need a couple days to figure it out. I don't see this being like, oh, now we just have dogs that live here forever. You know, I think that most of these dogs end up going back to their owners. And I think our PD does a wonderful job of dealing with the ones that genuinely don't have homes. I think that we kind of have to do this.
Riedel Police Chief Joshua Finney then received questions from the Riedel City Council members, with Councilman Frank Wilson asking about the previous relationship with Miranda's Rescue and how the new kennel project would fill that need.
And the other thing is, where Amanda said that this was 85% our people, pets that got picked up, were those going to Miranda previously and then they had to go to Miranda and get them back?
Under the previous agreement, at any time we took any animal and couldn't find the owner within a very reasonable amount of time, an hour or two, then the animal would be taken to Miranda's. They would have to come to us, pay their fees, and then go out to Miranda's Rescue, pay their fees.
Riedel Councilwoman Julie Woodall then brought up the need for clarification on how Riedel's proposed new animal kennel site would operate after construction and whether the city would collect fees.
But I hope that sometime we can maybe sit down and talk about more of the little things that we'll have to handle. You know, if we have them, how long we're going to keep them, veterinarian, if they need that. I don't want to make any mistakes that others have made in keeping animals.
Yes.
Here, I want to make sure it's all. And if we need, if we're going to, we'll be charging people when they come to get their pets?
Yes, if your animals get picked up and they're housed by the police department, you are stored the fees for your dog's running loose. And those fees do increase with reoccurrence.
Okay. But at some point, I mean, I would vote for this tonight, mm-hmm. but can we have a meeting and talk about all the little stuff that might?
Absolutely. This is a discussion item. The only thing I'm recommending tonight is that the council approve the construction of the slab here tonight.
Okay. That's perfect.
After questions and discussions, the Riedel City Council authorized construction of a concrete slab for the Riedel Police Department's animal kennel project by a unanimous vote of 4-0. The vote also authorized Riedel City staff to solicit donations, grants, sponsorships, and other community funding for the proposed kennel to replace services previously contracted to Miranda's Rescue. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Here's the latest from Caltrans District 1 on local road conditions and advisories.
This is the Caltrans District 1 Road Information Bulletin for Humboldt County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, July 24th. On 36, expect up to 15-minute delays near Carlotta. Expect up to 5-minute delays from Creekside Lane to Wilson Lane on the 28th. Slide removal continues west of Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park. Check Caltrans District 1 social media for updates. Expect delays west of Maple Grove and at the Butte Creek Bridge. On 96, expect up to 5-minute delays from north of Willow Creek to north of Hoopaw. On 101, expect up to 10-minute delays north of the Mendocino County line. Expect delays at the Eel River Bridge. Expect delays heading south into Eureka. Expect delays north of Oreck and near the Delnorte County line. On 254, expect delays north of Wyatt. On 299, expect up to 10-minute delays east of Blue Lake and east of Cedar Creek Road. This is the Caltrans District 1 Road Information Bulletin for Lake and Mendocino Counties State Highways for the week beginning Friday, July 24th. In Lake County on 20, expect delays west of Upper Lake near Blue Lakes Road starting the 27th. On 175, expect delays from Cobb Elementary School to Maple Shadows Drive. On 281, expect delays from Tenaya Way to Route 29. And in Mendocino County on 1, expect delays at various locations from north of Schooner Gulch Road to south of Garcia Court. Expect up to 10-minute delays south of Elk. Expect delays at the Greenwood Creek Bridge and north of Elk. Expect delays in Fort Bragg at Pudding Creek Bridge. Expect up to 15-minute delays south of Westport at the Blues Beach Trailhead to the Overlook. Expect delays at the Wages Creek Bridge and near the Wan Creek Bridge. On 20, expect delays east of Fort Bragg, east of Three Chop Road, and in Willits at Hollins Lane. On 101, expect overnight delays in Hopland. On 128, expect delays from west of Rays Road to east of Philo School Road. On 162, expect up to 10-minute delays from east of 101 to east of Sandbank Creek. On 175, expect delays east of Hooper Ranch Road. On 271, expect up to 10-minute delays near Dimmock Road. This is the Caltrans District 1 Road Information Bulletin for Del Norte County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, July 24th. On 101, expect up to 15-minute delays at various locations from Klamath to north of Last Chance Grade and near Hamilton Road. On 197, expect up to 10-minute delays near Ginny Lane. On 199, expect up to 10-minute delays near the Middle Fork Smith River Bridge. This work was verified at the time of this recording and is subject to change. For near real-time updates, check QuickMap.
Iran war impacts hitting poor people in Nigeria, especially children, as 23 million kids at risk in Africa and Asia, KPFA reports.
The war in Iran will have lasting effects, and not just for those living in the countries directly involved. Northern Nigeria, one of the world's poorest regions, has long been under pressure from armed rebel groups. Now, the conflict in the Middle East has worsened food security for millions of people living in poverty, especially children. At the same time, Nigerian President Bola Tinubu's vast economic reforms sparked high inflation after fuel subsidies were removed 3 years ago and the Naira, the Nigerian currency, was devalued. A World Bank technical report this week stated that 139 million Nigerians, over half the country's population, are now poor or vulnerable due to poverty. If the war in the Middle East continues, more than 23 million more children could fall into poverty by the end of the year, mainly in Africa and Asia, according to the United Nations Children Agency, UNICEF. During a visit to Nigeria, UNICEF Executive Director Catherine Russell said in the longer term, soaring prices and economic hardship mean that children in poor households are more likely to have stunted growth.
We're already estimating that between 18 and 23 million children will be pushed into poverty. Right? So that's a short-term, immediate consequence of what's happening. I think that the challenge short term is that children are going to be in greater need. They will be hungrier. They will be less likely to get the supplies they need, the immunizations they need. So it'll definitely impact them. For children long term, what that means is they're more likely to be stunted. Their development will be compromised. They are less likely to stay in school because their parents are under so much financial strain. So the long term implications for children are absolutely terrible.
Amid the Iran war, the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, through which a fifth of the world's oil passed before the war, sent a ripple effect across the world. A worldwide fuel shock drove up the prices of everything from gas and groceries to fertilizer and airline tickets. Fuel prices in Nigeria jumped from 58 cents per liter in February to $1 in April, with an after effect on the prices of food and necessities. Shehe Aminu, a Nigerian father of six, says his 18-month-old was diagnosed with malnutrition in April. His family's economic struggles grew worse when he lost his job as a taxi driver, a victim of high gasoline prices caused by the war in Iran.
Life used to be good. I worked as a driver and drove a vehicle on hire purchase, making regular payments to the owner. Whenever I returned home, I was able to provide for my family, and we always had enough to eat. But things began to change towards the end of last year. Then, early this year, due to an increase in fuel price, I could no longer keep up with my financial obligations. I now struggle to provide for my family. I had 3 children in an Islamic school, but I couldn't afford to pay their fees, so they had to drop out. When I wake up every morning, it pains me to see my family because I can no longer provide for them the way I used to.
President Donald Trump has been trying to force Iran to fully reopen the Hormuz Strait for months, turning to everything from airstrikes and naval blockades to negotiations and threats. As of today, the strait remains essentially closed, with ongoing effects in Nigeria and beyond. For KPFA, I'm Amina Gordon.
California tribal leaders speak out on the difficulty of fully asserting tribal sovereignty. Suzanne Potter reports.
California tribes navigate a range of priorities and opportunities, so leaders gathered recently in Los Angeles to forge a united front and to celebrate a new podcast. Reclaiming Our Stories, Voices of Indigenous Peoples of California, is from the nonprofit California Humanities, part of a nationwide initiative led by the Federation of State Humanities Councils in partnership with the Smithsonian Center for Folklife and Cultural Heritage. Erica Pinto is chairwoman of the Jamul Indian Village and heads up the California Tribal Chair Association. She praises the state's land back program, but says it should provide maximum flexibility.
San Isabel, for example, just got thousands of acres back. When we get that land back, I would like to see no strings attached because that's true sovereignty.
The leaders spoke of the importance of protecting the environment to ensure survival. They emphasized economic self-sufficiency and the benefits of cross-tribe cooperation. The podcast is available on RSS.com. A discussion guide and an exhibition at the California Museum are in the works. Darlene Franco, chairperson of the Wukchumni people near Visalia, says some tribes face obstacles in gaining federal recognition. Many form 501c3s to protect their people and their land.
Sovereignty is the ability to follow our things that were handed down to us. Our creation stories tell us that we were created by the animal people and we were given instructions. Take care of each other, take care of the land and the water.
Juan Reynoso with the San Pascual Band of Kumeyaay Indians said tribes came together during the first Trump administration to mourn the separation created by new sections of the border wall.
We would show up at that wall every day for the entire summer and we would meet our relatives from the south at the wall. We couldn't see each other and we would just pray and we would sing. We chose to show up for each other during the most harsh times.
Tribes also called for full funding of the Indian Health Service, saying any cuts would lead to new trauma, given the long history of generational harm inflicted in the past when Indigenous children were forced into state boarding schools where their native language and cultural practices were forbidden. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Ryan Hudson. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.